It was a perfect day in Dublin for a barbecue, and a burger was on the menu. It's time to start harping on rugby. Hello, my name is Jeff Pagano, and welcome to Harp on Rugby, where with the help of some fellow fans, I get the chance to harp on what's going on with Leinster, Ireland, and the wider rugby world. Joining me is someone making his 55th appearance on the pod. Welcome back to Mr. Connor Cronin.
He's all the fives wrapping up already. Thanks again for having me.
No problem. And also joining us is a late replacement, a bit like Josh van der Flair, but he says he won't wear a red scrum cap, which I suppose is fair enough. He's the host of his excellent online entity known as Post to Post Sport. This is his 18th pod appearance. Hello to Mr. Kieran Duffy.
Yeah, I remember there was a time when harping on rugby, some might not remember, was a purely written medium, just articles. I've been there since before the Leo Cullen era started. So I feel like, you know, I've gotten to see the evolution. The evolution of harping on rugby and have to keep up with the times now.
That's it. And because Kieran has graciously agreed to join us at short notice, we're not expecting him to do the match timeline. So Connor and myself are going to crack on with that, and Kieran will join us at the end for final thoughts. Right, let's crack on with our feature match of the week, which was, of course, Leinster v Ospreys in round 16, not to be confused with the round of 16 we've unfortunately been getting used to in recent years, of the 23-24 BKT United Rugby Championship, which was played at the RDS on Saturday evening. Now, everyone was talking about a very strange and unfamiliar light in the sky over Dublin, but you're in good hands because I like to think I know a thing or six about astronomy, and I can reliably tell you that thing was actually called the sun, and I thought it contrasted well with the aurora borealis we were all taking pictures of the night before. But seriously, after a fabulous day, it had cooled down a bit by the time Leo the Lion was hopping on Mike McCarthy's shoulders to lead the crowd in the pre-match Viking clap, and there was actually a late change for Leinster, with the really unlucky Will Connors missing out again, Josh van der Flair starting instead, and Scott Penny going to the bench, as the Ospreys eventually got things underway, kicking off towards the North Stand, Connor.
Towards the North Stand and that ever-elusive sun as well. I think normally Leinster would play north to south in the second half, given a choice. But you could see the obvious reason why not to on a day like that, because if you've got the Ospreys staring at the sun the whole time and you've got the option of a few fellows who can put up a high ball, you're going to hope that that's going to make a difference. I think it's really important to start, before talking too much about the action, saying that, you know, we said the last time I was on the pod, actually, when we were looking at what every team had left and who they'd be playing, and we said the Ospreys would be a challenge. And I know when yourself and Keogh were talking about it, he said it'd either be a very, very tight margin or a very, very wide one. You could really see what he meant in the first half. Ospreys absolutely came to play. I think they were very, very up for this game, particularly in the first half. And you can see that based on how the scoring went. Look, I think in the first exchanges, you see how much they're up for it. But some really slick passing, and suddenly the ball is out to Ronan Kelleher, who's sprinting out on the wing in a very... From where I was sitting, I'm like, who is that running so fast? He's very large. Is that one of our props? Who's that out there? And it reminded me a bit of Sean Cronin from back in the day, and how frequently he'd be found out on the wing running a line. But it was Kelleher this time who did a really good job of pulling two defenders before he offloaded to Jimmy O'Brien, back for his first start since November, who suddenly had himself in loads of space and with just enough pace to outdo the defending Ospreys. I mean, he made an attempt to sort of tap the leg from under him. He'd probably been better diving at him and trying for a proper tackle. But his laziness is our benefit. And Jimmy goes the rest of the way to score and put himself reasonably in field to make it fairly handy for Ross to convert. And we're up 7-0 fairly quickly. And it was nice to see Ross converting. And that's a running theme in all the notes I took, that the positions of Ross's conversions were often quite far towards the sideline with no difficulty this week. And I'm like, just where was that last week when we might have been a bit more comfortable with it? But you take what you get when you get it. And as I say, we're up 7-0. And then there's a little bit of kick tennis before our first mistake, when the ball is passed back to Frawley inside the 22, and he kicks it out on the full. So we're straight back there for a straight back to where he kicked it from for the line out. But look, I mean, they get a bit confused. The ball hits the deck, and we're able to clear it again. But I think that the Ospreys line out wasn't great in that early stage. They just kind of, they weren't entirely sure what to do in those first couple of minutes. Like, we've got the ball, now what? And you see it again, because there's a knock on. And after the knock on, the ball gets passed out to Robbie, who's offloading it to Luke McGrath. And he's got this lovely inside offload from Furlong after a step. Like, Furlong was doing things that she's looking, going, what? This is incredible. Like, that's what a step. I actually marked as well, like, there's that step that he cuts inside on a guy. There's the fact that he's playing as scrum half on about 39 minutes. He's playing as fly half at 37 and booting the ball well down. I'll come back to that later when you're talking about it. Look, it's all the time. It's phases and it's patience, and it's bringing us closer to the line. But I think the Ospreys' defence was really, really strong, and we were held out to about 7 metres for, you know, easily 5 or 6 phases there. Because, say, the Ospreys were definitely up for it. The defence was excellent from them. And I think it's just them not rolling away that gets us a penalty. Penalty goes to the corner. A couple of phases. There's a really good carry from Henshaw in there. And a penalty advantage called that it looks like we're going to make use of. And then we've got Luke McGrath standing at the back, and it looks, for all intents and purposes, like he's going to pass back inside. And Ross Maloney switches it out to the outside line, taking the ball at a bit of pace and diving over for a happy birthday try, which I was delighted to see him get. Just another time we get to see how influential he can be as a player for us, and how much we're going to miss him when he goes. And again, that's quite close to the touchline, and Ross manages the conversion pretty easy. So we're at 14-0. It's all looking really, really promising. And then off the restart, it's very quickly an Ospreys scrum, which had to be reset. And that's something that happened far too much on the day. I don't think that our referee was entirely certain what was going on the whole time. And that's a common theme for a lot of referees. They don't know what's happening in the scrum. They're guessing. And I don't think there was, it's one of those ones where if he hadn't had to reset it, if there was a little bit more pace, like the old crouch, touch, pause, engage had a rhythm to it. Whereas a lot of referees now, it's crouch, bind, let's wait another 3 seconds, now set. And I think once everybody's bound, once you can see the weight is held, they've got to call the set a little bit quicker. But off the reset, it just gets picked straight out by the eight, who passes it inside, and they're just galloping over suddenly for a try, for a moment where everybody switched off. And in fairness, Watkins has a lovely inside line where he's cutting back towards the scrum and the players who haven't unbound yet, and gets himself past a couple of our guys very, very easily. I think if you're any kind of a defensive coach watching that, you're taking frantic notes for things you're going to shout at the boys when you get into the dressing room afterwards. I think, you know, look, it was a well-worked try. They were definitely deserving of it for taking a really good advantage of their opportunity. And then off the restart, I think we were going a little bit backwards before we then knocked on. And after that, we get penalised at the scrum. They go to the corner off the set piece, and we're giving away another penalty. And with advantage, they make the decision to kick the ball high and Morgan is going after it down into the corner. And as he jumps for the ball, I thought initially when he came down that he was hit when he came down. I think the referee thought the same. He was hit when he landed and driven out. But on the replay, and the TMO calls it back, and he's right to call it back, he's taken out in the air. You know, there's all kinds of questions of, would he have scored a try? Would he not have scored a try? If Raleigh hadn't tackled, would he then have been in a position to hold the ball up and all these things? But realistically, the probability is he would have scored a try where he was. And so not only is it a penalty try, it's a yellow card as well, and can't have a whole lot of argument for it. I think we're lucky that the tackle in the air, there's nothing excessive about it, and there's nothing dangerous. It's stupid, it's careless. It's worthy of a yellow card. And suddenly we're 14 all. And all the confidence you have when you're 14 nil up is kind of disappearing a bit. And you're looking, going, well, look, Ospreys have been in that, what they've been calling online, the race for the eight. They've been in it. And it's, you know, there's a reason they've been in it. And I said it at the time a few weeks back, that if they get to the last eight, how good it'll be for the competition to have representatives from every country in there. They've got a big ask to get to that, but they were really showing in that first 20 that, you know, they're there on purpose. It's not an accident. And look, after the restart, there's a couple of phases. They make an absolutely brilliant break. The offload to put the 10 free, and he kicks the ball straight past Henshaw and avoids the tackle as well. And Jimmy O'Brien, like, fair play to him getting back there to hold that ball up. And particularly as he gets back and he gets hold of the ball, and you can see him looking, going, where the hell is my try line? There. And he just holds the ball about 6 inches from the try line, hoping the support will get there. And we're scrambling at that stage. The next, that ruck is a bit messy, and Kelleher eventually pulls it forward an extra yard or two to give a little bit of room, but when the clearance comes, it's still not out to touch. So we're still under pressure, and they're coming back at us. They're offloading, they're running at us. And I think we're a little bit lucky as Doris wins that turnover. I think in watching it back, and I went and I rewound a little bit and looked again, and went, yeah, he definitely puts his hands on the floor first. So I think we're really fortunate to get that turnover when we do, but I think it saves us from potentially another score. And, you know, that would have put a lot of confidence into Ospreys that we didn't want to have there.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, it was almost like a follow-on from the final quarter last week, because what we found against Northampton was that if we make any mistakes, we're at this time of the season where people are going for playoffs or trying to get into finals or knockout rugby or whatever, you make a mistake, it's going to be punished. And a lot of these, and the Ospreys came, we jumped out to an early lead, but we quickly found out that if we made any little errors ourselves, that they were there to they were there to punish them. I mean, that was, you know, a lot of people can say, maybe Osborne missed a tackle on that Watkin try. But, you know, you're going to get big, powerful centers at this stage of the season making lines like that in situations. You don't want to get in that position at the first place. The thing with Frawley kicking out in the full, he's the one who passed it back into the 22 himself. He was the one who made the pass that put it back into the 22. So little things like that. In other stages of the season, maybe in September or whatever, you get away with those things, but now you can't. And it's good that, in a way, it's sort of good that Leinster are experiencing this now, and we realize that we can't afford to make those mistakes. So that this is what was happening. And, you know, it's all of a sudden, and Northampton, a 17-point lead becomes a 3-point lead this week. A 14-point lead becomes a level, you know, and you've got to be ready for that. It can change like that. And we all know what to lose can do if you make a mistake. So that's something you definitely have to look at.
It's good to have that video footage to be able to say, look where you're making your mistakes, guys. Yep. Look what you're doing wrong. Let's fix that now so that next week it's better and the week after it's better again.
Absolutely. And like you say, Doris might have been a bit lucky, but he did, Jack. We got that penalty, which was crucial at that moment because Ospreys were really on a roll there. But we were still a man down as the clock ticked into the second quarter. So for the next while, it seemed like we just wanted to contain the Ospreys, maybe play for as much territory as we could. And our defending was backing up those kicks pretty well. Like there was a good steal from Ronan Kelleher, followed by a nice combination between our centers, Osborne and Henshaw, which got us into their half. Then there was another safety first kind of kick from Ross Byrne, which found touch at the Ospreys 22. From that line out, the visitors fluffed their lines with a forward pass, which often wouldn't get called, even with the entire ground screaming at the ref about it. But here the scrum was thankfully given. We looked like we had a decent shove on the first put in, but like you said, there was a lot of resets and another one was called this time. After the second attempt, we ran a nice little play using Jimmy O'Brien to link Ross and Robbie. That gave us front foot ball, but we looked like eventually we were starting to get bogged down in a series of phases going nowhere until we got a penalty advantage at the breakdown. And on that very phase, Ross Byrne was clapping his hands, looking for the ball quickly. And once he got it, he did the faintest little grubber through. He was barely tapping it and it went right to the try line behind their fullback, Max Nagy, who had to go to ground to deal with it. And unfortunately for him, it got away from him right in front of Jordan Larmer, who simply just had to slap it. I mean, they pretty much don't come any easier than that. But Ross was good at yet again with the conversion, and suddenly Leinster were back up by 7, and Frawley returned to the pitch just a couple of minutes later. Now, even when the manpower was restored, we were still kicking for territory, including a punt from Tadhg Furlong, which almost got the biggest cheer of the night.
And on that kick, I think it's a little bit remiss of the TMO not to have looked at the challenge that came in on him as he made the kick, because somebody near me said, oh, that was late. And I said, no, he was committed. I'm more worried about the fact that there was no wrap and the shoulder was very close to the head for me. But that'll be one for the sighting commissioner to have a glance at, I hope.
Interesting. Yeah. I must have a look at that because everyone's so like, oh my God, Furlong's kicking. And everyone's cheering and looking how far it goes down the other pitch. But yeah, the end of the pitch, definitely. And also, there was another kick from Ross Byrne this time that went a little bit too far, bringing play all the way back for a scrum. And from this one, the Ospreys 9, Morgan Williams, had a snipe up the blind side with good support, getting them all the way to our 22. And having worked that side of the pitch some more for a few phases, they switched it with a kick pass towards Keelan Giles, trying to put Frawley under the same kind of pressure Nagy had seen earlier. Now, Kieran was able to grab it, but Giles put him down over the line for a 5-meter scrum and a really strong platform for the Ospreys to draw level again. But there was a break in play, and as Ty Furlong was getting attention, probably something to do with that hit he got, very, very likely, the remaining 7 forwards got together in a huddle of their own, clearly working on what to do at this scrum. And boy, did they come up with something good. After another finicky reset, once the ball was put in, there was a massive shove which won a penalty, causing none other than Furlong himself to punch the air to make the whole world know that that drive was straight. It was a superb effort that looks like it owed a lot to Messrs. Maloney and Jenkins in the engine room. So that penalty produced a line-out, and from that, we kicked ahead again, and Robbie knocked it back where Luke McGraw gathered and proceeded to make his way right up to their 22. But from there, we couldn't quite capitalize, and a knock-on killed the half, leaving things still all to play for at the break with the scoreline Leinster 21, Ospreys 14. Now, before we return to the pod, first a little reminder of all the different places you'll find us in the Ruggersphere. First of all, we have a radio slot every Friday after the 5 o'clock news on Dublin South 93.9 FM. Then when it comes to online, as well as our main site at harpinonrugby.com, we also have a presence on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and new this season, we're on both Threads and Blue Sky. So if you're on any or all of those platforms, please do give us a follow to check out our full range of Leinster and Ireland rugby content. So it was Leinster getting the second half underway, and we needed another one of those quick starts, Connor.
Yeah, and look, it looked a very standard looking exit from the Ospreys off the restart, you know, box kick up. And there's Doris carries, and he carried in such a way that it was immediately putting fellas on the back foot because they thought they had him down, and he gets that extra yard or two. So as they're stepping back and, you know, the passes start coming out, and there's an absolute beautiful pass. It just a fizzer from Robbie Henshaw out to Jimmy O'Brien on the wing. And like the power in it, but the accuracy of it as well. Because Jimmy takes it and he starts to cut back inside. And as he does, and as the tackles are coming in, he offloads to Jenkins, who's gone round the back of him. And suddenly Jenkins is just strolling past three backs who are making attempts on him. He brushes off the first, the second two are hitting him far too late, and he's over the line. And suddenly we've got another try, which again Ross converts. And now all of a sudden we've got the bonus point in the bag, and we've restored that 14-point lead. and we're less than a minute into the second half. It was it just came from nowhere. Like anyone who sort of dawdled around waiting to get their drink or took their time going to the bathroom or anything, coming back going, what the hell have I missed? You know, and it's a well worked try. But it all comes, I think, Doris's carry and that Henshaw pass are the key two things that create that. It's just really nice to watch. Like again, we get off the restart, it leads towards a scrum. And again, I think we're dominant, but we're not getting rewarded for it. And like it happens a few times in the game that if your loose head is driving the tight head off the ball and off the line, and okay, maybe our own tight head isn't doing the same to the loose head. Maybe they're not quite driving in the same moment, but it's quite obvious that one player is giving ground while another is gaining it. So you got to question, what do referees think is happening? And I'm not pinning this on one individual referee. I'm questioning, you know, as an overall organization, what are referees actually looking for? Why isn't that clear? I mean, I think there's one particular scrum after Kelleher was still on the stage, and Dan Sheehan, when he comes on, kind of looking, going, yeah, sir, I did this thing, I did that thing, and I did that thing, but you're not rewarding that. And I'd be pretty sure that the front rows probably have a better idea of what's going on in there. But look, this isn't, I say, it's not an individual thing. This is a collective thing that the league probably needs to look at for next season, so that those who are demonstrating dominance get rewarded for it, whoever that might be. There's not a huge amount happens in the next few minutes. There's some kick tennis. There's some good phases and some good running lines that lead to absolutely nothing. And it's kind of frustrating to watch because you're looking, going, oh, there's a good, oh, we've made a mess of that somehow. And there's this thing, but it's running into a brick wall of defense. Because again, I think the Ospreys defense were really trying very hard again at that stage. You know, they'd sort of picked up the energy again and were working really hard against us. But eventually, the sight of Josh van der Fleer sprinting at the fly half is kind of looking, he must have taken his eye off the ball for a second or something to spot, oh God, here he comes, because he knocks on. And rather than trying to, you know, work for the, you know, just take the scrum, we just take the ball instead. There's a lovely break from Jimmy O'Brien in the build-up here. There's another one from Henshaw. And eventually Henshaw's passing it out to Jordan Larmour, who does, as Mark calls it, the phone box step. He's stepping three defenders. Three defenders end up on the flat of their asses as he bounces, you know, just steps one way and the other. He's not got a lot of room to go right. How have you ended up not defending him out there and allowing him to cut inside again? It's just, it's wonderful to watch as he just falls over the line eventually without any massive, it looks like there's not a massive effort. I know there's a lot of skill gone into what he's doing. There's a lot of knowledge and how his own physique works to make it happen. But it just looks like he sort of falls over and goes, oh, look, there I am. There's a try, happy days. And now we're up to 35-14. Off the scrum, you know, we get, off the restart, there's another scrum, which we're very lucky to get. Again, it's one of those lucky moments. I think Doris, who's kind of wriggling his way out of the ruck, somehow catches the ball in the scrum half's hands. Now, I very much doubt it's intentional, because I can't imagine he can see through the man lying on top of him to know where the ball is. I think he's just literally just trying to work his way back out of the ruck, and it just catches and the ball gets knocked on. Look, we get penalised off that scrum as well. And off the line out that results in that, the Ospreys look like they're making really good ground. And again, just does he take his eye off the ball? What's going on? As the player goes into our 22 and just spills it. It just disappears onto the ground from, that's bringing us up to about 60 minutes. At that stage, we've a heap of subs have come on. I think not quite the entire front row has been changed at that stage. We've got Conan on with Baird shifting forward into the row, and Ross Maloney gone off. We've got Charlie Natai on for Frawley. For Ross Byrne, and Frawley stepping up into the 10 spot to see what else we can make happen with him there.
Yeah, I mean, that knock on, as they seemed like they had a break into our 22. I mean, again, I think that's another example of our, even though our defense doesn't directly cause that knock on, it's the defense the rest of the time that forces it, because the teams know that when they have half a chance against us, they're under that extra bit of pressure to make that count. And they might rush it that little bit extra. Says, "Oh, I have to get, there's a little half break here. If we don't score from this, we may not get another chance." And that might actually come to force that. Northampton did a couple of those last week, and it's kind of this, it's a reputation we had before Nienaber came as well for defense. But the way the system is clicking now, I think it's even causing them even more. But yeah, that was another chance they had. Even though the match was all but over as a contest going into the final quarter, well, I certainly can't speak for every Leinster fan. I reckon at this point, a lot of us didn't really expect that final score to be what it ended up being. Because in fact, I could push that all the way up to the 68th minute. I mean, with Gibson Park on the pitch, we were always going to move at a faster tempo. And he showed this with a quick tap at a scrum penalty. But for the most part, we seemed happy enough to continue kicking away and making the Ospreys do something. And to be fair, another reason we didn't look like racking up a big score, like as Connor said, the Welsh region weren't exactly doing too badly on defense overall up to that point. Their back row was pesky at the breakdown. They were also getting turnovers elsewhere, like they got one from their winger, Luke Morgan. And by the way, just a quick sidebar, what's it with all the Morgans at the Ospreys? It seems like they're adding an extra one every season. I mean, after Northampton. I mean, Northampton brought over a host of Alex's with him to Croke Park last week. Now, in fairness, I know we've been known to have more than our share of Burns, McCarthy's, and O'Briens over the years. But hey, listen, I suppose we're not the only ones. Anyway, listen, back to the match. 68th minute, we're up by 21. Charlie Nate was doing all sorts when he came on, doing kick passes and generally getting involved with the creative side of things, something he can do well. It's not all about the strong carries. But one pass was a little bit of a wrong one, and it was picked up by Keelan Giles, who we all know can hurt you. But his own offload was bungled and ended up right back in Charlie's arms. And with their wide players now caught in our half, he quickly got things going down that channel along with Gibson Park. And all of a sudden, Tommy O'Brien was chipping the ball over the top into the 22, running into the space to collect it and scooping an offload to Jamie Osborne for try number 6. Then a few minutes later, we were attacking in their 22, where we won a penalty for a deliberate knock-on, which became a line-out 6 meters from the line. And after a throw to Conan at the back, Van der Fleer did his trademark link play, getting it to Scott Penny, who shipped it on to that man, Charlie Nattai, and there it was, try number 7. Now, if then there was any doubt that a 50-burger was on, that disappeared when, after another series of phases on the Ospreys line, their sub, Ivardi Boshoff, saw yellow for his deliberate knock-on. And we went for a play from the tap-and-go locker, which saw Sheehan battling his way back to the line before another peach of a ball from Gibson Park went straight to Larmer. Last week, it was one JL getting a hat-trick at Croker. This week, it's another at the RDS. Who knows? Maybe if our contributor, Jay Long, can bring his boots to Belfast next week, you just never know. So anyway, that brought up the 50, but could we make it 60? Well, shortly after Jimmy O'Brien was announced as player of the match, an Osprey forward pass gave us one last attacking chance in the form of a scrum. And a combination of our skill and their resignation made this last score look way easier than it should have done. Off the scrum, Frawley put Larmer through, running at pace towards the 22. And his pass to Jimmy O'Brien was timed perfectly. And after Ross Burns' deft grubber earlier, Jimmy's here was even better, as it sat up perfectly for Tommy O'Brien to just get it down. And really, there's not really much more to add to that.
I'll add one thing if I can.
Yeah.
Is look at Frawley when we score. Look at Frawley shouting at the lads, "We've time for one more. We have time." I don't know what words he's saying, but the attitude is, "I'm taking this quick. There's 40 seconds on the clock. He can use every second of that taking the conversion if he wants." And instead he takes it quick. So we've got the option of the restart. And sure, why not have a go at one more just in case? You love the attitude. You love to see it. You love to see them really go for the jugular.
It's almost like he likes playing first receiver or something. Jesus, it's funny that, isn't it? You know? Yeah, that's what it turns out. There was something to add to it after all. But like I say, the final score was Leinster 61, Ospreys 14. Well, that bonus point win for Leinster wasn't quite enough to put us back on top of the URC, because earlier in Pretoria, Glasgow secured three tries in the final quarter to nick two bonus points in defeat to the Bulls, which meant the Warriors stay top despite bonus point wins for all three behind them on the table. Those same Bulls, Leinster, of course, and Munster, who got their first Inter-Pro win of the season at the expense of Connacht. But it's now really tight at the top, with just 4 points separating first and fourth and just two games left each. Ulster also secured maximum points with a 31-20 win at Chanethi, which obviously hasn't hurt their chances of making the last eight, although they probably need one more win to be sure. And up next, they have Leinster and Belfast in a match which is also likely to decide the destination of the Irish Shield, if that's something you're following. As the URC table stands, it looks like the only teams outside the top eight still in contention are Connacht and the Lions. All of which brings us to our final thoughts, and we're going to start with Kieran.
Yeah, you know, I think there's been a few occasions for Leinster this season where we've, we've started really well right out from the blocks, as we often expect Leinster to do. And that happened, yes, that happened on Saturday, two tries straight away. And then we let the opposition back into the game. It happened against Leicester in the Champions Cup. It happened against Cardiff and Zebre in the URC. It's happened a few times. And it just hasn't been that kind of clinical first half, putting a team to a sword. I remember someone said that in the WhatsApp group. They'd love to see us put the team to the sword. Ultimately, we did do that. I mean, 61 points to 14. I mean, that's a big score. It isn't a big score in the Premiership, obviously, in the English Premiership, but it's a big score in the URC. In fairness, that's happened a few times that we've started really well and then the other side, we've let them back into it. And that's no disrespect to the Ospreys. They stood up and came to Leinster, and in fairness, they were very competitive in the first half. So, it's just a danger coming into the URC playoffs. And of course, there's the European Cup final in 2 weeks' time. If we do that against Toulouse in the European Cup final, I feel like it would be very dangerous for us to build a lead and then let them go. Say we go 14-0 up, and then they come back to 14-0. It's kind of like as good as a lead for them, because they pegged us back and they have the momentum and they've crushed our momentum. So it's going to be something to work on. I think we need to, I don't like saying intensity, because I think intensity is something that people say in sports analysis to kind of replace actual analysis, but we do need to keep that intensity up. So it'll be an interesting one. As for the game overall, I mean, I think it was the right decision to play a really strong side. I think we could have got the job done with a bonus point try win against Ospreys with a slightly weaker squad. But in fairness, we need to hit the ground running against Toulouse, and we need to stay in the game. We need an 80-minute performance. That's something we haven't seen an awful lot of from Leinster this season. And in fairness, maybe it hasn't always called for it this season. But yeah, hopefully Will Connor's injury isn't too serious. And it's a case of job done. Thought Jimmy O'Brien was very impressive. Glad to see him flying back. I think he's actually a very important player for Ireland and Leinster in terms of his versatility. Probably a player that'll feature in the match day squad for the final and for the URC quarterfinals anyway, that we're guaranteed to have. So very good win in the end, but not a far from perfect performance. I think the scoreline put a bit of gloss on some very basic mistakes.
Yeah, and Connor.
I think Kieran's pretty accurate there. You know, there were some moments where we just weren't at our best. A 61-point score, and I said it in the wrap, the desire to go for more, the desire to push for 68 was wonderful to see. But you contrast that with, about 50 minutes in, right after that moment where Andrew Porter went for a run with just one shoe, which... quite entertaining to watch back as well. But we end up with a line out, and off that line out, they shove our maul back about 8 meters. And then when we do get the ball out, they manage to get the turnover as well. You know, we're lucky that in trying to go for every meter he could, that they kick it dead rather than it being a 5 meter line out. Because as Kieran says, you give other teams a chance to stall your momentum, to prevent you from doing what you want to do. And it's building for them. It's giving them confidence. It's giving them the headspace to say, we can do something here. And no better team to do it than to lose. With regards to this match, and not trying to look too far forward or anything else, for this game, the scoreline says job done. And that's great. And it is definitely the right decision to go for a strong team to keep the cohesion of that strong team together, to keep everybody who's worthy of a spot working hard to keep their spot, to give a few guys a run at first, an opportunity to be going out first. You know, Kelleher's a really good example of that, a chance for him to have started the game, and, you know, he'd a decent game as well. I don't know if it's a decent enough game to put pressure on Dan Sheehan for selection for the biggest of stages, but he's a good example of players who are stepping up to say, you know, I'm still here and I'm still doing my job and I'm still doing my job well. It's great to see Jimmy O'Brien back. It's brilliant to see Tommy O'Brien back and to see both of them on the scoreboard. Like when Osborne scored his try, you know, Tommy O'Brien makes that break and kicks it through, and just the mentality to say, I could pick this up and I could struggle and I could work really hard and maybe I'll score this, but there's a man who'll definitely score it. And it's not about me, it's about the team. That's why he got a contract renewal, I think, because he is all about the team. And I'm really hopeful to see him with a run of no knocks and no bumps and really get a run of games. I think, like I say, it's job done. It's 5 points. It's disappointing to see the Bulls let Glasgow get 2 bonus points and keep us off top spot. But it's done no harm to our points difference and put us back on the highest points difference in the league as well for now. So looking forward to next week against Ulster.
Yeah, definitely a net positive. Okay, well, let's look at the broader issues there with Leinster now at the moment. And one talking point might be, we spoke about Ross Byrne's performance. He was much better, like you said, off the kicking tee this week. But just in terms of overall play and creativity and how we're doing, I mean, lads, how do you think, looking for the last few matches of the season's big, you know, they're all big kind of knockout matches coming up now. Is Ross Byrne the one for us now to see us through the rest of the season, or what way do you think we're looking? Connor?
I think that it's interesting to look at Ross's statistics. Last week's kicking off the tee aside, you know, he does a lot of the basics really, really well. He plays a bit deeper than you might want. But like I say, you know, if you look at, he's got just a couple of highlights I picked from the game, you know, crossfield kicked Jimmy O'Brien. That was absolutely lovely and really well taken by Jimmy, but you know, it's got to get to him. That kick through for Jordan Larmour's try, as you talked about, in the middle of the first half, there's a set of sloppy phases where we're not really getting anything. And suddenly the ball comes back to him. He's like, right, we need to now gain something from this awful exchange that we've had over the last minute and a half. And he kicks a lovely ball through that bounces neatly and gives, it's an Ospreys line out, but it's just outside their own 22. So we've got territory there. We've got opportunity. So he's very, very capable. He's very good at doing what he does. Is he the right man for the job is a different question, I think, because if you look at the last 20 minutes of the game and Gibson Park comes on, and himself and Gibson Park have a few, did they have any time together on the pitch? I'm not sure. But when Frawley steps up into 10, I think it suited Gibson Park better. I think it suited him better. Now, I'm not trying to say anything negative about Ross. I'm not trying to say he's not really good at what he does. But I'm saying if you want to build your team around a particular player and a particular decision maker, that right now our decision maker is Jemison Gibson Park. There's a moment, Heggo was sitting beside me in the south stand, and he says to me, like, how does he do that? I'm like, what do you mean? He says, he took that ball, and in half a second, he looked up, looked around, and then kicks it into space, and it goes out over the sideline to be a line out with sort of 7 meters to their try line. And he's done all that in about a half a second. So if you're building a team, you build it around the player who's making the best decisions, and that is 100% Jemison Gibson Park. So the question is, what suits him better? I think yesterday, say when Frawley came into 10, the style of play and the interlink between them looked really, really nice. It looked like Gibson Park could be a bit more creative and make some more decisions and Frawley plays it a little bit flatter to the line, and I think he's a little bit more confrontational. You know, he'll take the ball and he'll run at somebody, whereas Ross will take the ball and look for an option. He's less likely to go running at a player. I think it's the same reason that, you know, when he puts on 10 or 15 kilos, that Sam Prendergast will be as good as he will be, because he's not just looking around for an option. It's like, I'm an option. I'm going to do something. And if I get tackled, then I have my options. But they've got to worry about me first. And I don't think any team is looking at Ross Byrne and saying, we need to worry about what he's going to do before we worry about what somebody else will do.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, all right. Because like you say, we don't want to put down Ross at all, because he's done so well for us. And you talk about playing against Toulouse. I mean, we all remember that game. I think it was a pool game in January at the RDS, where he did really well. I remember I was just in line. He did this kick pass to Dave Carney in the corner, in front of the Anglesey stand. And it was right on the money. That's when he was doing kick passes for fun all over the place. And, we all know he has the game. But like you say, it's we're talking about what Leinster maybe need now. And I think it you could argue that the ideal, that Frawley might be the more ideal player we need right now. But you'd have to caveat that, because you'd want a Frawley that has been playing there with Gibson Park since, in all the maybe the knockout matches, or at least, you know, since January, a lot more game time, them playing together up to now. And you could see how keen, you said yourself, how keen Frawley was to get another play out of it at the end of the game. And and he was running wraparounds, and he was doing all sorts of, he was keen to show the toolbox he brings to the table, and all that stuff. So it was, he was really trying to make the most of his chance for the ball.
I think it's interesting that none of us have mentioned even Harry yet. And again, it's not out of disrespect, it's just we're basing this on yesterday's game and what we see in there. It's not that, you know, we're not trying to put Ross down here, and that's not where we're going with this. It's just is he bringing enough extra to make him somebody that Toulouse will worry about?
Yeah, I mean, it's circumstances that has us doing that, because I mean we do have this, we've been picking a lot more 6-2 benches this season, and once we do that, it there's no choice really but to have Frawley on the bench if he's available, because it's you know, because of his versatility, and he can play different positions. But yeah, no, Harry, you know, he has to be in the mix of the equation as well. Like if we're going 5-3, you know, or like you say, if Keenan isn't available, you know, there's a lot of options there. Harry is definitely in the picture there. And you mentioned Sam Prendergast as well. I mean, he's kind of waiting in the wings, and he has his time to come down the line, but he's had some decent starts this season. And, you know, you can see in him that he's another one who likes you say, makes himself the option in those plays. So there's a lot to discuss there for sure. We'll see what happens. But like you say, let's broaden it out a little bit towards the whole team and the selection we'll be looking for Belfast next week. We went strong. So we won the semifinal. We got to that final. We went very strong. We only made a few changes to that team. We kept a lot of the core players in key positions together. There's a lot still riding on this game in Belfast. I mean, you know, we may have different opinions on how much we want to win that Irish Shield, but the points are important as well, especially with Glasgow going to South Africa. They might drop more points, and you know, that top two positions still very much up for grabs. So where are we looking at the selection for Belfast?
I think in terms of the Irish Shield, it'll probably mean more to Ulster, considering they haven't won a trophy. You know, obviously we haven't won a trophy aside from the Irish Shield in the last two seasons, but it'd just be something for Ulster to take. Yeah, obviously it's not the most prestigious trophy in the world. It's not gonna make any big difference. But this is a big game for Ulster in terms of, you know, they're under new coaching now, and that Irish Shield would just be, just to be able to say they have the best inter-pro record, that would be something. So this is a game Ulster are going to be, and obviously with the way the league is, Ulster are going to be really trying to win this game. So I think like Leinster have to go strong. How strong? I don't know, because there's a week to go to the European Cup final. But at the same time, would it be necessarily a good thing if we leave the starting 15 at home for the, or in the stands for the game against Belfast, and have them all lingering, thinking about a game against Toulouse next week and have it kind of weighing on them, because then we get into a situation where maybe it's a psychological thing. If very few of the starting players who are going to start against Toulouse play against Ulster, then you look at, is that game just going to be weighing on them? Would it be a good thing to have them go out against Ulster? Obviously, this is dependent on getting a win in Belfast, which isn't necessarily going to be an easy thing to do at all. Like I said, Ulster are going to be very up for this game. But if they go out, get a win, then suddenly it's like, right, we just won our last game, we're able to go. Whereas if not, then it's been 2 weeks since they played a game and they have to go out and play a European Cup final. I would argue that regardless of... I think the fact that Ringrose and Keenan haven't played since for a while since being injured, I think that rules them out of the European Cup final unless there's other players being ruled out for whatever reason. But I think they have to play a role for both featuring against Connacht the week after the final and for the URC quarterfinal and hopefully a semi-final and final. I think they have to play a role here. Does Keenan start? I'm not sure. Would that be too much? I think Ringrose starts. Ringrose hasn't had the best of seasons, so I think he needs a good 60, 70 minutes here. Then it's all dependent on, like I said, I think it might be, maybe it's counterintuitive, but maybe Ross Byrne, leave him off. Don't give him the chance to do anything that might knock his confidence next week and just keep him for that Toulouse game. Does Kieran Frawley start at 10, maybe, if he's going to play? I think that'll be very telling if he's going to play a role against Toulouse in that 10 position. I think Frawley might start there. Larmer and James Lowe, you'd argue you'd rest one of them. I think you rest James Lowe. You just, like we saw in the final last year, he had been injured. It was his first game back and he didn't have a good game. He didn't play to his standards. Then you're kind of looking at which players, we can't afford to lose any players, but which players can we really, really not afford to lose? So you'd argue rest Lowe, rest Jenison Gibson Park, rest Dan Sheehan, because we have adequate replacements for those players. And James Ryan's the other one. He hasn't played in a while. I think he has to feature if he's fit for the URC run. And so I think this is an interesting game because we're looking at the European Cup final next week, and there's going to have to be a bit of rotation. I don't think we need to necessarily play the Reese Ruddock All Stars or anything like that. You could argue Sam Prendergast, does he have a go? I think Harry Byrne needs to feature at some stage as well, just in case we need him. We are going to need him at some stage in the run in. It's unlikely Ross Byrne and Kieran Frawley are going to play every minute at 10. Big game, but it is a must win. I mean, we have to win against Ulster and Connacht in order to get at least a home semi-final in the URC.
Connor?
I kind of jotted down what I thought would be a prospective starting 15 if everybody is fit, if everybody who needs to be fit is fit. And I think, like Kieran has said, you know, some of those players, they need to play. I think we need to see Gary Ringrose playing. We need to see Hugo playing. If he's fit, James Ryan, although I would expect James Ryan would come on from the bench as opposed to starting. I think a lot of players, I think a lot of the possible starters for the Toulouse game would be on the bench. Come on, have 20 minutes, half an hour, really making a difference, keeping the blood pumping, getting that, as Rich Masood often says, you know, touching the ball in anger. Having that little bit of time on the ball before they go play in Toulouse. I mean, for me, I would probably expect that if we're resting some players, we'd probably have, say, the probable subs starting. So you'd end up with the likes of Healy, Kelleher, and Michael Alalatoa in the front row against Ulster, Jenkins and Maloney, and then probably a back row that might be, you know, something like Conan, Deegan and Penny, or, you know, that kind of a setup. Keep an end at seven, but shift Deegan or Conan so that, again, Conan gets the minutes under his belt and hopefully builds up towards the final. And then if he doesn't get picked for the final, is coming on going, I did a good job last week. Why the hell am I not being picked? Let me show them why I should have been in the first place, which we've seen from him before. I think you're right. We rest Gibson Park altogether and let Luke McGrath start against Ulster, and then maybe have a look and see what Harry does. You know, let him have his chance to to go up against Billy Burns and see what the two, what he can manage against him. And then as for the back five, I think Jimmy O'Brien, Gary Ringrose, Charlie Nassai, Tommy O'Brien and Hugo, assuming they're all fit, would be our starting backs against Ulster. Because, I say, Ringrose and Hugo need time. Tommy O'Brien, only coming back from injury, probably needs a bit of time. Jimmy O'Brien, only coming back from injury, needs more time. And again, it gives those other players opportunity to take a break. And if you need somebody to come on, finish the job, we've a lot of options. You know, if we're looking at going, well, this could be going a bit better. You know, we keep some of those prospective starters on the bench. So they've got a bit of time. They've got 20, 30, 40 minutes before the final the following week.
Yeah, I like that idea of having a really strong bench to Belfast, like of possibly maybe even eight who will feature in London, because it limits their game time. But and like you said, it takes the Toulouse out of their heads for an extra week, and they're focusing on this game. And because if they're told, listen, you're going to be off this week, and that makes a 2 week span where you're kind of, you could be overthinking what you're going to do in that final and stuff. So that's a good idea. But it's loads of different possibilities that are going to happen next week, and it would really be interesting to see what the lineup they go with.
That Ulster need to win that as well.
Yep.
They also really need to win that game. So I think they'll be coming, not just for the Shield. They've got Munster in Thomond the following week as well.
Well, whatever about the Irish Shield, they'll probably want a trophy for doing the double over us anyway. So that they'd be celebrating that. So there's definitely all to play for. Well, listen, lads, we're going to leave it there. Many thanks again to Connor and Kieran for joining me. Thanks, lads. I hope to have you on again soon.
Cheers, guys.
As for our next batch of Harpin, look out for our 80-plus column during the week. Then we turn our attention back to Leinster's quest for the Irish Shield. We'll have a preview of our match at the Kingspan on Friday, and we'll be recording the Wrap Pod on Sunday evening. As ever, keep up with our content at harpinandrugby.com and across all our social media channels. The links are in the program notes. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.